General Charles Gordon stood on the steps above the harbour entrance and watched the Ibis limp in. When Ryder looked up at him from the bridge, his regard was cold and cutting as blue ice, with no trace of a smile nor any hint of sympathy. When the steamer was tied up at the stone jetty, Gordon turned away and disappeared. Major Al-Farouk remained to welcome the bedraggled passengers as they staggered ashore from the barge. His head was swathed in a white bandage, but his expression was ferocious as he picked out those of his men who had deserted their posts and attempted to escape. As he recognized them, he lashed each offender across the face with the kerbash whip he carried and nodded to the squad of askari who were lined up behind him. They seized the marked men and locked manacles on their wrists. Later that afternoon, when Ryder was summoned to the general's office in the consular palace to make his report, Gordon was distant and dismissive. He listened without comment to all that Ryder had to say, condemning him with his silence. Then he nodded. "I am to blame as much as anybody. I place too much responsibility on your shoulders. After all, you are not a soldier, merely a mercenary trader," he spoke scornfully. Ryder was about to make an angry retort when a volley of rifle fire rang out from the courtyard of the palace below. He turned quickly to the window and looked down. "Al-Farouk is dealing with the deserters." Gordon had not risen from his chair. Ryder saw that the 10 men of the firing squad were leaning nonchalantly on their weapons. Against the wall of the courtyard facing them sprawled an untidy row of corpses. The dead men were all blindfolded, with their wrists tied behind their backs, their shirts blood-soaked. Major Al-Farouk was walking down the line, his service revolver in his right hand. He paused over a body that was twitching spasmodically and fired a single shot into the blindfolded head. When he reached the end of the line, he nodded to a second squad of men, who ran forward and piled the corpses into a waiting cart. Then another group of condemned men were led up from the cells into the courtyard and lined up along the wall. While a sergeant tied their blindfolds, the firing squad came to attention. "I hope, General, that the consul's daughters have been warned of these executions," Ryder said grimly. "It's not something that young gentlewomen should witness." "I sent word to him that they should keep to their quarters. Your concern for the young ladies does you credit, Mr. Courtney. However, you might have been of greater service to them by affording them safe passage downriver to a place of security." "It is my intention to do so, General, as soon as I am able to effect repairs to my steamer," Ryder assured him. "It might already be too late for that, sir. Within the last few hours I have received the most reliable intelligence that the Emir Osman Atalan of the Beja tribe is in full march with his array to join the Mahdi's besieging force out there." General Gordon pointed out of the window across the White Nile at the Omdurman bank of the river. Ryder was unable to conceal his alarm. With the notorious Osman Atalan opposing them, the nature of the siege would change. Any escape from Khartoum would become incalculably more difficult. As if to endorse these grim thoughts, the next volley from the execution squad crashed out, and immediately afterwards Ryder heard the soft sounds of human bodies flopping lifelessly to the ground.